I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
And I just want to say that I'm truly grateful to be here and have this opportunity to share with you my experience, strength, and hope, and what this book has done for me in my life. So last week, we had really just finished our third step, and on the page on page 63, on the bottom of that page, it says we launched out on a course of vigorous action. So I always like to, before I do a fourth step or I take someone through a fourth step, I always believe that it's important to reaffirm my third step through that third step prayer. And there's a reason for that, and I'll share this with you. On the top of page 63, there are the third step promises, and on the second sentence it says, we had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, capital H there, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. So these are the third step promises for me, as they were pointed out by my teachers. And if you wish to, you can say it with me, but I always say it, and sometimes I'll say the third step prayer several times a day as I take my will back. But the third step prayer is, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. So I do this just so that I can reaffirm my dedication, because I needed help on my fourth step. And I said last week, and I'll say it again, my first fourth step was ugly. And simply, what does that mean? It simply means that I fought it, and I listened to the people in the rooms that said they had such a difficult time, they struggled with it, they were negative. And that maybe was their experience, but I focused on that, and I ignored the people that talked about their fourth step as this release, their clearing away, and they were again walking in the sunlight of their higher power, and that was about identifying our defects. So. Are my defects, I should say. On page 59, so the fourth step says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So when I first came in these rooms, I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. That's what I had become. So for me to do this fourth step, to take these sheets that my sponsor had given me, and now to write down this fearless and moral, which moral really is honest, that's what that means, by myself, was a very difficult thing. I told you I was this tough kid from Newark, and I grew up in this strict Italian Catholic family, a lot of love. We had a great family. I said to you way back a few weeks ago, four weeks ago, that I wish I could tell you I had a terrible childhood and I had some terrible event that led me to alcohol and drugs, but that's not my case. But in my family, it was just simply, it was that tough love thing. Put your nose to the grindstone. There's nothing you can't do. Put your head down, move forward. And I had good success with that in my life. I could see the things in my life through school, through sports, through business that reinforced that. So now I'm going to come into this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, sit with this man that I had become comfortable with, and now I'm going to share with him the things that I have never told anyone, or I had looked at, much less put or document on a piece of paper that I had done in my life. My deepest feelings, my fears, my resentments, my harms that I had done to other people. I'm looking at this and I'm saying, there is no way am I going to do that. Remember, contempt prior to investigation. You remember the Brussels sprout story, right? So I've never tried Brussels sprouts, but I'm not going to eat them. Why aren't? I don't know. I just don't like them. And it was just contempt prior to investigation. So here I am, and on the bottom of page 63, it says, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal housekeeping, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was vital and a crucial step, there's a warning for me that's telling me how important this is. It's telling me it's vital and crucial. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. So, therefore, we started out on a personal inventory. This was step four, squiggly writing, it's important. And then it gives you a reference as to a business that takes no regular inventory, and it's kind of like if they don't know what's moving off the shelves and they just leave it there and they don't pay attention, they're not going to be very productive. They're not going to show a profit. So for me, in my life, by me not looking at those things, my defects of character, they're there. I can't possibly identify those things. I'm blind, really. I mean, I can't see it. So further down on the page, it says resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. So what does that mean to me? So that means to me that I'm blocking God in my experience and my understanding of my fourth step. And then it goes on to say to me, the good news is when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So the first column, and on the next page, we're gonna see an example of that on page 65. But the first column is where I lay out the people, places, and things in my life that I have this resentment. And so, what does a resentment mean to me? Basically, a resentment to me is, that's something that I feel someone else owes me an apology about. That's about as simple as I can put it. If someone's done something for me, an institution or whatever, and they have harmed me, they owe me an apology. That's how I identified my resentments. So, and trust me, my first sponsor, Sergio, was about kind and a loving man, firm, but compassionate, that took me through this. And he could see that I was blocked. He could just see that I couldn't do it. There are people that are just not capable. We read it in the earlier pages. It says that some people are humanly incapable of being honest with themselves. So at this point, you know, in 2007, that's where I was. I was just truly incapable of being honest. But this is a vital step. It's crucial. But I can't do it. I'm just so locked, and it's a fear thing. I didn't know it at the time. A lot of it was fear. A lot of it was I'm just not used to telling another man my secrets, my deepest, darkest secrets. The guys that I hung around with, I'm not going to tell them I'm afraid. They'll make fun of me. They'll laugh at me. It just wasn't acceptable. You're a tough guy. You're a man. What do you mean you're afraid? So there was a whole lot going on. And when I get the honor and the privilege to work with another man who asks me for help, I have to remember that. I have to be compassionate and understanding. to that person that they just at that time may not be capable of doing that. So what does that mean? And this is what Sergio did. He kept taking me back to my third step. He kept bringing me back so that I could go forward. And I have done that so many times with other men, sometimes successful, other times it didn't. It fell apart. And a fourth step is something that I'm doing alone, but I am saying, I keep referencing to my sponsor, because I'm going to tell you my truth. I'm not going to tell you something that I saw someone else do. My experience in my first fourth step was I needed someone to hold my hand. I needed someone to take me through it. I was frozen. And Sergio was patient and compassionate enough to do that. And I'm going to tell you the last thing was, deep down inside, I had identified with him and I had this attachment to him. And we were building this friendship. It wasn't just sponsee, I'll see you at the 530 floor in Park, we'll have a cigarette afterwards or a cup of coffee and then part our ways. He was leading me through recovery through his examples. Speaker meetings, taking me with him to meetings, took me on a couple of 12-step calls, did commitments with me. He was the first one that introduced me to bookers. So what do I mean by this? He was leading me by an example. He wasn't telling me or suggesting for me. He was standing there next to me. So what this means is, there was a part of me that I felt that if I told him the truth about me, that he wouldn't like me. And I did not want to lose him as this friend. Because I was scared. I didn't think I could stay sober and clean. I had not been successful. I was 53 years old. I couldn't do it. When I came in the rooms, I was 53 years old. I just said, there is no way that I can have any kind of long-term sobriety, and I don't know how to do it. And I didn't want to lose him in my life, because he gave me the strength, and he would just say to me, we're going to be all right. My sponsor today will say to me, you're going to be all right. It may be a little uncomfortable for a while, but you're going to be all right. So we moved through the resentments thing, right? So I was given these sheets, and there's some different groups that have them, and the book over here on page 65 is going to give us what they did back in the day. And there's something in here that's very, well, there's a couple of things that are very important, but the most of all is, when you look at the first column, we're on page 65, and this was the example as to what they used back in 1939. So it talks about, the first column is we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principals with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore, we were burned up. Now, they call it, you know, on our grudge list, we set aside our injuries and it was our self-esteem. That's really the third column. But let's look at these three columns right here. So the first column is people, places, and things. So the first name is Mr. Brown. The cause, his attention to my wife, told my wife of my mistress, Brown may get my job at the office. I want to point out to you, those are 19 words. Okay, it's not, please don't, anyone that's written the equivalent of War and Peace in this column right here, please don't be offended. I was brought through, and my teachers have told me I don't need to do that. I just need to write down some highlights that are listing what it is. These are 19 words. Next column over, it affects my sex relations, self-esteem, fears bracketed. Sex relations, self-esteem, fears bracketed. Security, self-esteem, fears bracketed. So as we go down this, And this was the amazing thing for me when I looked at my sheets, and especially in this column. What happened was, if you notice, the word fear is bracketed, right? And if you go down to the next name, Mrs. Jones, you see fear in there. You see in my employer fear, and then down in my wife you see fear. You also see some other things that are the same in other people. Now, these examples that are given us, these people don't know each other. Some do, some don't. They have nothing in common. Some do, some don't. But on my list, many of the names that were on my resentment list didn't know anybody, didn't know each other, had nothing to do with each other. But I could see in that third column there was fear. This was my beginning. I call it cracking open. I was beginning to be cracked open for me to understand that at the age of 53, I was coming to the realization that I lived most of my life afraid. This tough kid from Newark, this was a hard pill for me to swallow. This tough kid from Newark, a successful businessman, had many accomplishments in man's world, the material world. Most of my issues were fear-based. Okay, so that's what that third column did for me. And it gave me a chance in a positive way. And I want to repeat, in a positive, uplifting way, to take a look at myself. Not to look at myself as you're a piece of crap, you're no good, you're terrible, you're personally responsible for every terrible thing that's ever happened in anyone's life. That wasn't the way that I was asked to look at it. Because as I went through this, my fears, my resentment, my harms, I began saying to myself very quietly, uh-huh. So that's the reason. So that's why I'm still living on page 52. If you remember, page 52 was the bedevilments, right? We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery, yada, yada, yada. It's a paragraph right in the center of that page. That's where I was living. I lived on that page. And now it was beginning to make sense. Things were starting to clear up as to really what was the problem, which was the fourth column. So in the fourth column, it'll say to me, how could I have handled this differently? And what that really means for me is it gives me a chance to take a look at the harms that I had done or the things that I had done to the people. Because if you look at, go down into my employer, the cause, unreasonable, unjust, overbearing, threatens to fire me for drinking and padding my expense account. So what that means is this guy's drinking on his job and you're ripping the company off. But yet he's got it on his resentment list. So I began to see how the things that I had done weeks or months previously had affected someone to retaliate against me, but all I could see was that retaliation part. I couldn't see my role in it. And that's where that fourth column would come in for me to go back and take a look at it. I have some sheets up here if anyone wants them. If you have an email address, I would be happy to email them to you. If you're doing something with your sponsor now, please don't let me change anything that you're doing. If you're doing your fourth step and you're in the middle of it, please keep going. This is my experience and what I've done. If you're not doing your fourth step or haven't done it yet, please, I urge you to do it. At least participate in one and get in there. Because this is really the first action that we've taken. That's why I need to keep taking that third step before I get into it. So if you go to page 66, and in the middle of that, it explains to me as to how I was blocking God. The paragraph starts, "It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? but with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. There's a warning for me. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, capital S. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poisonous. What that means to me is I can't stay in that pain too long. If I'm in that pain and I don't have a solution or I don't have an understanding as to how I can move through that, looking at my video and my track record, I'm gonna numb up. I'm gonna change the way I feel. I'm gonna want to drink. We go on to the next page, on page 67, and on the bottom paragraph it says, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Question mark there. That's a question for me to take a look at. Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. So this is the way fear works in my life. When I'm fearful of something, and it doesn't mean that somebody's coming at me with a knife, that's obvious. But if I'm fearful in the workplace of someone may ask me a question and I really don't know the answer, and I may have feelings of less than, or I don't want them to think that I'm not educated or I don't have an answer, I'll lie. It's just knee-jerk reaction. I'll lie and come up with something that I think is the answer or sounds good enough to get you away from me so that I can go figure out what the real truth is, instead of just saying I don't know. And I learned that in my fourth and fifth step. I learned that about myself. Fear isn't necessarily a terrible thing, because Joe and Charlie talk about it. My sponsors are Joe and Charlie Freak, and they talk about fear, you know, the fear of heights, because I can't fly, I'm not a bird. It's okay to have a healthy fear about heights, and the darkness, it's good to have a healthy fear about the darkness, because I can't see in the dark, I might get hurt. And then it was pointed out to me that when my fears are impacting my life so that I can't live a normal life or be comfortable, then I really need to take a look at that fear and see what it is. So when I did my list, I was really shocked to see how much fear was there, how many times it appeared on my list. I can get into the names that were on there and tell you funny stories about the people and all this other thing and all that. But the reality of it is that I needed in a hurry to take a look at what was going on with me that really was driving me. Because up until when I came into these rooms, I didn't see a problem. So the last list is our sex and harms. So that's on page 68 on the bottom. So it says, now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It is so easy to get off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of lower nature, a basic necessity for procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. So it goes on to say, for me, in my life, especially with working with another man, it says we want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. So that means it's not up to me to tell you how you're living your life. It's not up to me to tell you whether you're living your life correctly when it comes to that. If you've done a thorough fourth and hopefully a fifth step, you're going to get a chance to start taking a look at that. So what does all of that mean? It talks about, in these pages, it talks about raising jealousy in other people, our loved ones or our companions or the people that we're attached to. Maybe I'm not performing an act, but it have through flirting or what I think is this debonair, charming personality, am I causing this fear, this jealousy, this harm, this uncomfortableness in my partner's life? And I get a chance to take a look at that. So sometimes it's not always that physical intimacy one-on-one. It could be something else that we may be doing, that I was doing, I want to say. Still on this page, it talks about also harms, which on my sheets, my sponsors took me through the things that I had done to people that had nothing to do with the sex part of it. It may have been a business deal. So if you notice back on the page where they gave the examples, on 65, one of the examples was padding an expense account. So I had businesses, I had partners in some of the businesses. I was real estate, and I had padded expense accounts. I had harmed that person. I guess somebody might use a term where we did have sex, but that, if you know what I'm saying without me saying it, that I had screwed them. But that really, the reality of it is that I had harmed them, and they had really done nothing to me. So that's going to come in later in my eighth and my ninth step. But there are certain things where people may be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I'm in a bad mood, or I'm angry, or I'm irritable, restless, and discontented, and I've decided that I'm going to go off on you because you deserve it. And you need to hear what I'm going to say to you, and it may not be kind and loving, for no reason at all. Because I'm not understanding what you may be going through in your lifetime. I've seen this with my daughter. So I have this 32-year-old daughter with Down syndrome, a loving child. What a gift that God gave me. Healthy. But she has this mental illness, and she is the sweetest thing in the world. And there will be an instance where I may be I may lack patience, I may be irritable, I may have so much on my mind because I am selfish and self-centered, that I may answer her in a way that I can just see the expression on her face that I just crushed her emotionally, not physically, but emotionally. And I can see that. And it absolutely destroys me. And I've got to go immediately to her and take a look at her and to grab her and hug her and not explain to her why I'm justified in doing it. I've got to do a ninth step. I've got to make that right. I've got to do a tenth step, take that look at myself. I know I'm jumping ahead, but I need to give this example to you as to how I'm capable of harming another person in my life. May not seem like a lot to some of you. To me, it's a big deal, and I don't want to be that guy. You know, I want to be the guy that I keep telling everybody I am. And that's an example for me of what this program has done for me, to be able to give me that. Because I can still do it. You know, I can still do that. But so moving on page 70. So I know I really blew through this, I wish I had 4 weeks to go through this with you, because this is just so important. So I know we're not on the fifth step, but I'm just going to tell you at this point because I have to tell you how important it was to me. So I'm resistant to Sergio, and I'm not doing this four step, or I'm doing this half-assed thing, excuse my language. And I'm handing him the sheets, and he's shoving them back. And we did this dance for a couple of weeks, and he let me get away with this procrastination and my attempt to avoid this fourth step. And finally, he just said to me, "Look, I'm coming over. Grab your book, grab your sheets, we're going for a ride." So I got in his car and we went for a ride over to a park in West Caldwell. I was living in East Hanover at the time. He picked me up and we went over there. And I remember it at this point, I'm going to say this to you, that I was blessed with a teacher that grabbed me and just, we went right into the steps. There was no doubt. He knew I was in trouble. He knew that I was a chronic relapser. He knew that I had no program of recovery, and he knew that if I didn't get into the spiritual experience, I was going to drink and drug again. So he just banged me right into this. So it was I came in March, and by this time it was summertime, and it was a warm day, and we went into this park, and I can remember as if it was yesterday, and we found this park bench, and I could hear the kids playing baseball in the background, and people running around, the dogs barking. And I began my resistance dance, and he just very patiently and compassionately, he just told me that, "Look, okay, here's the way we're going to do this." He said, "I'm going through each and every one of these with you." He said, "We're going to talk it out, and we're going to discuss this." He said, "And we're not leaving until we go through your list." And he said, "It may not be complete." And he said, "It may not be completely accurate," he said, "but you're doing a fourth and a fifth step with me today. And we're going to move forward because you need to get moving on 6, 7 and get into that 8 and 9, which was another spiritually uplifting thing." So we went back. We did the third step. And I said to myself, here it goes. And I'm either going to be honest and I'm going to tell you and you're going to accept me, or I'm going to just tell you and I'm going to kill you and bury you here so that nobody can ever find you again. Now, I wouldn't do that, but that's kind of how I felt in my heart. Like, I'm going to do this finally for the first time. And I told him things that I had never told another person. I had never told my dad, who I was very close with. I had never told some of my best friends. And when we were done, it took us a few hours. When we were done, I had never experienced the feeling that I felt without alcohol or drugs. I had this sensation that my feet were not touching the grass as we walked out of there. I had this feeling of calm and peace and serenity. I didn't realize how long we were there, but we were there for hours, and I just came out of there so comfortable. And he said, "Let's eat," and we went and we had dinner, and it was just an amazing thing. And again, I never had a white light experience, but I can tell you that for the first time in my life, I felt that at least I knew what was wrong with me. When people were screaming at me, "What's wrong with you? Why don't you stop drinking? What's wrong with you? How could you do this again?" That I believed in my heart, and I still believe today, that I knew at that moment what I needed to do. I knew the things that I needed to work on, and it was absolutely, absolutely uplifting. So on page 70, I want to just sum up with this. So why this is important. And some of the other things. I know we're still in the sex part of it on 70, but it says, "Suppose we fall short of the chosen idea and stumble, ? Does that mean we're going to get drunk? ? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. So it depends, it says, it depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done, have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven, and we will have learned our lesson. If we are forgiven, thank you, Dave, and we'll have learned our lesson, If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. Now, that's a warning in there. I don't know whether that's going to happen in anyone else's life, but that's enough for me to take a second look and to give me to heed this warning. So, last paragraph on this page, next to last, it says, if we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards all men and even our enemies. For we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision, which is our third step, and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, that's my fourth step. You have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And I did on my fourth step. So one thing I want to point out to you that one thing that I jumped over, there is a four-step prayer that was shown to me and given to me that still is important to me. So we go back to page 66. And on the bottom of that page, it says, this was our course. And this is where the prayer began for me, as it was pointed out. It says that we realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms, the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. So here is our prayer. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. So that prayer, this is a sick man, how can I be helpful, is an example of me getting out of self. It's an example of me turning it. I'm going inward to go outward, and I'm now, instead of wanting to kill that person and dig a hole and bury him, I'm now taking a look at something from a different angle that I've never looked at, a different perspective, that maybe that person may have something going on in their life that I don't know about that is causing them to act in this manner, which I just happen to be standing in the wrong place at the wrong time. Or, in my mind, they're just terminally sick and misguided, as I would always look at certain people in my family and make it very easy and just say that they're sick, you know, and understand that they don't have a program of recovery, that they're not living a spiritual life. God bless them. That's the way they chose to do things. But for me to have them in my life and close to me, I run the risk if I'm not spiritually balanced and I don't understand this prayer, that I can become hurt, I can become resentful, I may retaliate, so on and so forth. So this for me here is this prayer that gives me a chance to go back and take a look at other people. So let's go to chapter 6, which, because I've only got one more week here, and I would like to try to at least get us up into, to try to get us up into 10. Before I leave you. So chapter 6 really deals with steps 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 are in here. And then step 12, and really the true way to sponsor someone is working with others and help other families. So again, this chapter is dealing with my ideas, my emotions, and my attitudes. And it says right here, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. So we're moving into our fifth step. Fortunately or unfortunately, I already gave you my my fifth step and how it worked. But I want to talk about this just a little bit, because it was made clear to me early on by Sergio that he clearly said to me, not knowing how this my fourth and fifth was going to turn out, he kind of relieved some of the pressure, and he said to me, "You don't need to do a fifth step with me." He said, "You don't have to. I don't want you to think that you're locked in. You may want to find someone else." And the book references that. Sergio relayed to me that when he did his first, fourth, and the fifth step, when he did his fifth step, he went into a cathedral in New York and went into confessional and started doing his fifth step with the priest. And the odd thing about it is the priest halfway through said to him, "So, I get it. We're doing a fifth step." And that priest, just as I believe that God puts people together for a certain reason, had been brought into his life at that moment, and had some sort of an understanding, and maybe he was in the program, I don't know, Sergio didn't know, but there was this thing that okay, go ahead. This talks about in this chapter, it talks about the importance of this, because as I said to you, I'm not capable of doing this on my own. I needed to have someone else that I could talk to, that I could be accountable to. So the fifth step back on page 59 says, "Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs." So the fourth and fifth are together for me to now express this, which I talked to you about living in this world of you don't tell anyone else what's going on. If you've got this problem, you come to the family, we'll straighten it out. So here's this whole outline for me to follow. And it says right here, this is perhaps difficult. This is in on the middle of page 72. "This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient." So this self-appraisal thing, I'm good at seeing your defects of character. I can't really see my own very well, because I am delusional, and at this point, I'm still living as this victim thing. So it's very difficult for me to have done that. If Sergio didn't do that, and we hadn't done that fifth step together, I wouldn't have been able to see this. So I want to get into page 75, because it jumps ahead and it says, "When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time." This, you know, and I also want to point out, this is boom, boom, boom. We're moving here. And if I hadn't slowed down by weeks my fourth step in fighting it through procrastination and not being able to speak the English language, we would have just kept moving right along. And the book talks about that. This is a book of action, and it just keeps saying, keep moving, keep going, don't take a vacation, don't, you know. And I wanted to point out to you, and this is important, when I was locked and I was blocked, we didn't go away and say, "I'll see you in 2 weeks." We went back. We went back to the third step. Our noses never came out of the book. We went back and found the step that I was on. Because whenever there's a problem in my life, going up to today, whatever that problem is, there's a step in this book for me. So we went back to the third step, but we kept the action moving. So it says, "When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have written an inventory, which we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do, why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence." So I have heard other men's fifth step. I have had men that were not my sponsees. They have come and said, "Can I talk to you? I need to dump this, or I need to do this." And I've sat with them, and we've gone through their fifth step. just as it was written in the book. And I have revealed some of the things in my life that let them know that I am not here judging them. I am not on a throne. I am as sick as you are. We are the same. My day count may be different. But I am just like you. And it says, it goes on to say, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. And this is for me what happened. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. And I believe I had that in the park that day. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. So I'm beginning to go through this personality change. And I'm beginning to go through that spiritual experience back on 567 that we read a few times up to this point. Personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. So it says right here on the last page. I have this highlighted because this is we're getting ready to go into a sixth step. But it says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. So for me and my teachers, they tell me this is the only place that I get to pause. Now, obviously, I didn't live with my sponsors and. The men that I was working with, so that we were on top of each other. It wasn't a retreat. It wasn't something that we went right through. There was obviously breaks in time where we had to go to work, you had to go home, whatever it would be. But this tells me here that I'm going to get quiet, and I'm going to get peaceful, and I'm going to reflect inside. And it says, carefully reviewing what we have done, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we return to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, which are the steps, we ask if we have admitted anything, if we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. And it goes on to say, this is a question, is our work solid so far? And it gives me a chance to go back and look at my first five steps. Have I done the best I can? You know, is this really the best that I can produce? Are the stones properly in place? That's another question. Because have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Right? All structures are built on a foundation. There has to be something solid underneath, otherwise it's going to crumble. Have we tried to make mortar without sand? It's a question. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can He now take them all, every one? It's a question. So if we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. That's it, right there. So it says, when ready, we say something like this. This is a prayer. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defective character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed steps 6 and 7. What? We just went through 4 and 5. We're all the way up to 7, and I'm ready to do my 8th step. What happened? Like, what is that? So, for me, at this point, it was way too quick for me. I didn't, you know, I. So, this willingness, which is step 6, is described so accurately in the 12 and 12. I didn't know that. I had to learn that. Sergio pulled out the 12 and 12. And we read it because 6 is a willingness. It's me looking what's happening is I'm looking at the things that were once acceptable in my life, that were a daily part of my life, which I saw that I had no role in, and that this is just the way I am. And I was perfectly okay with that. Now I'm not. This is just different perspective. So now how do I do this? How do I change? So this seventh step prayer is telling me that this is begins with the humility part of it. Because God is my father. I'm the child. I'm playing this role. And so what do I need to do? I need to go and ask him. And it says, my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. So what that means, and it was explained to me, is to try not to hold on to those things, which I did. There were two grave mistakes that I made. When I did my sixth and seventh step, I sat back and did nothing. So what does that mean? I just said to myself, you're so powerful, you go ahead and change me. I'm going to continue to act out. I didn't drink or drug on it, but I still had bad behaviors. And I just said, if you're so powerful, you change me. I wasn't that arrogant about it, but I still wasn't ready to change fully. I had to go back again, and I had to get myself to that point, and I didn't understand it. So the 12 and 12 on step 6, there's just some things in there. And it's on page 63. I know I have you at a disadvantage, and if it wasn't for Patty being so kind to let me borrow hers, because I let one of my friends borrow mine, and I realized tonight when I got here he never gave it back to me, which is fine. But God brought me here, and Patty was nice enough to let me borrow hers. And hers is clean, and I promised I wouldn't write it or highlight it in it, so I'll put my pen over there. But it says, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So I'm not going to read the whole thing because we don't have time, but there's some things that are important, and it tells me how important this step is. It says right here, this is a step that separates the men from the boys, or the women from the girls. I don't want to be... not politically correct, so declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A.A.'s greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on all his faults without any reservations whatever has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator. So what does that mean to me? It just means for the first time in my life, if I'm willing to take a look at myself, and I'm still doing it. I'm still doing it, time and time again. It just means that I'm growing. This book is telling me, and it's a promise that's telling me that I am growing. And it's giving me, I don't want to say an attaboy, but it's letting me know exactly where I was and what I was doing, because it's I know, and this book is acknowledging that I, as much as I had this willingness, I wasn't still capable of being able to change. So it goes on here to just say, let's dispose of what appears to be hazardous open end we have left. It is suggested that we ought to become entirely willing to aim towards perfection. We note that some delay, however, might be pardoned. That word in the mind of a rationalizing alcoholic could certainly be given a long-term meaning. He could say, how very easy, sure, I'll head towards perfection, or in my case, when someone would point out to me that I wasn't changing, to get rid of them, I would say, I'm working on it. And that just meant that I wasn't, and it really meant that there was, what else are they going to say to me? And I realized that that's what I was doing. A long-term meaning, he could say, how very easy, sure, I'll head towards perfection, but I'm certainly not going to hurry any. Maybe I can postpone dealing with some of my problems indefinitely. Of course, this won't do. Such a bluffing of oneself will have to go the way of another pleasant rationalization. At the very least, we shall have to come to grips with some of our worst character defects and take action towards their removal as quickly as we can. The moment we say no, never, our minds close against the grace of God. Delay is dangerous. Rebellion may be fatal. This is the exact point at which we abandon limited objections and move towards God's will for us. So here's what happened and how it worked in my life. By me not changing, I became uncomfortable. Inside, I became uncomfortable. Irritable, restless, discontented would be a good way to explain it. And I couldn't figure out why. It was because I was still repeating some of those old behaviors that were on my fourth step, and I really wasn't working towards changing them. So in step seven on in the 12 and 12, page 72, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So it says, since this step so specifically concerns itself with humility, we should pause here to consider what humility is and what the practice of it can mean to us. It says, and indeed the attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of each AA 12 steps, for without some degree of humility, no alcoholic can stay sober at all. Nearly all AAs have found, too, that unless they develop much more of this precious quality than may be required just for sobriety, they still haven't much chance of becoming truly happy. Without it, they cannot live to much useful purpose or in adversity, be able to summon the faith that can meet any emergency. So what does that mean to me? It just simply means this to me. There's no way am I moving forward on my eighth step. I'm definitely not doing a ninth step if I'm not humble. And I definitely can't do a tenth step because I can't take a look at myself now. I'm on my own. But when I say on my own by the tenth step, you know, there should be this spiritual thing that has happened to me in my life. And now I've got to take a look at what did I do to you on my own without a fourth step. It gives me a chance to take a healthy look at myself. Gee, that situation didn't turn out real well. What? Why? Why do you think that happened? So if I'm not humble, I mean, that's a short part of the 10th step, but I'm just saying to you, there's no way. There's no way am I going to go to my ex-wife and make amends. You know, and that's just taking a wrong and making it right. I'm not happening. I may BS myself in thinking that I can do this ninth step, but you'll see next week when we get into that. I was hoping we would have got to it this week, but we just didn't because I'm a blabbermouth. But I just think that there was so much in 4, 5, 6, and 7, and you know, I urge you just to get a 12 and 12 if you don't have one, and just when you get to your sixth and seventh step, to read those two chapters because there's so much in there, and then you know we're gonna get into on page 76. It says in the middle of the page, we have then completed step 7. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. We look at steps 8 and 9. So if you can see what just happened in recovery, is we started with this list and bang, we're all the way into 8th and 9th, which is some major steps. And we read in most meetings, we read the promises. Those are the 9th step promises. And a lot of those promises came to me, began to come to me, and I began to experience those before I got to my 9th step. So that was just the magic of the program. That was the magic of my relationship with my higher power and my God, of what he was giving me. You know, that when I asked for him, please, you know, let me start my life over. Let me be a better man. Please help me. I can't stop drinking and taking drugs. That he heard me. And this is part, this is my process. This is what I need to be doing. And I'm hoping next week, my last week, we can at least get into 10 and 11 because they're very powerful, very, very powerful steps. So thank you very much. I'm really grateful. I love you. Thank you.